This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sunder. Together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, I want to talk about the low-tech smartphones that we are seeing. Like, it's on the rise, and your Lite phone is one of them. It was one of the pioneers of these low-tech smartphones.
And I have to issue a warning now. Uh-huh. There may be a rant about to follow with the launch of the Lite phone too.
Yeah, so let me just introduce the Lite phone, the original. I think 2017 is when they launched, and if you have no idea how it looks like, it's like a business card. It weighs, you know, just like a few coins stacked together. It's like holding a card holder. You know, it feels like that. And there's only one button on the phone, and it's like a tiny little keypad that will lit up. And it's going through the means of what they call this extreme minimalism. And it's their way of, the founders, Joe Hollier and Kai Tang, is their way of, you know, uncoupling ourselves from the screens, rediscovering the world around us, creating a space, creating space for a slower and potentially more meaningful pace of communication. So there's no keyboard. There's no this T9 texting, which is what we all use for in our you know, smartphones today. There's not even a contact list. There's only just 10 numbers that you can save at a time, but they're all meant to be up on a speed dial.
Yeah, in other words, it's a mobile phone from the early, well, no, the late 1980s and the early 1990s.
The noughties, yeah. So it's for a phone that did almost nothing. It actually got about $200,000 in the crowdfunding goal for the first version. And then it got people like Foxconn getting super interested in the phone. They had like a 50,000-person wait list, and they only shipped about 15,000 units. But it's actually very impressive because the company was born on Kickstarter, and we always talked about, you know, how companies get onto Kickstarter and don't seem to have that success. But now they have done the new version, the Lite Phone 2.
Well, they have to. But before we get there, we have to point out, there's a really good Verge article which Jeff shared with me as background for this piece. And the founders themselves found that the original Lite Phone that they conceptualized was too limited for them to use themselves. One of them lasted only a week using it as their primary device.
And that's the thing, right? So Lite's marketing material suggested that the phone was designed to be used as little as possible. And the on this Verge article, this says that the creators have outdone themselves because, in fact, very few people use that thing at all.
Yeah, it just became a status symbol. It became a bit like the I Am Rich apps that we were talking about MSP just now.
Yeah.
You know, it became this way of saying, I've got the money to spend on another phone that I'm not going to use, said the person who has a drawer full of other phones that he doesn't use.
So the Lite phone, you know, was designed to be simple and functional with limited usage. But the Lite Phone 2 now seems to add more features into it. And now they're saying, like, this is the fully functioning simple phone, whether it's your only phone or whether it's your second phone. So just in March 2018, they launched the Indiegogo campaign for the Lite Phone 2. And it's out. Well, the model is out. And what, you know, I just feel like there may be a space for these kind of low-tech phones to come into our daily lives, but I don't know about the idea of...
Well, I think there are a few drawbacks with this. First, the price. It's $350 US, so it's actually more expensive than a lot of budget and even mid-range smartphones.
Yeah.
So you're paying a premium for a phone that looks very nice but really doesn't do very much.
Mm.
And the designers said that they had to avoid the trap of the one thing I need, because everyone's one thing
is different.
Yeah. So when you start meeting everyone's needs, you end up with something that is basically just an iPhone.
Mm.
But the problem with the phone that they've put together is that, again, I see it speaking very much to Silicon Valley tech folks. So one of the things they've included is a ride-sharing app. Now, that's fine. you know, that's fine if you're the kind of person that doesn't have a car, lives in a place where you can walk to most places or take public transport. Now, for a lot of us, we live in places where we rely on cars, so we want to have Waze or Google Maps or whatever other map apps.
Yeah.
It also shows that these are the kind of people who are probably not needing a phone for work purposes. Because for most of the rest of us, our bosses, our colleagues, our clients are contacting us constantly over systems like WhatsApp. You know, we actually require for our daily daily use to have these kind of messaging apps. So I think it's very limited. Yes, you are right. There is a market for people who want minimalist and stripped down phones, but we can still buy those phones. Yeah. Nokia has a current range of great feature phones that look back to the history of its devices.
And still do more than the light phone,
and,
too.
Yeah, and you know, you can still go online if you need to. I have in my drawer at home an Ericsson T29S. I've said that on the show before. So if I'm going somewhere where I want to have a strong signal because it's got a big antenna and I don't need to be connected to the internet, that's a phone I can take with me for that purpose. And I know that the battery life is going to last me, you know, the best part of a week or whatever. So when I'm off grid, that's the perfect phone. But those phones already exist.
Yeah.
We don't need somebody to come up with a $350 version when you can just go on the second hand and the refurbished marks. I mean, I did it before the show today. I had a look for old Motorola refurbs like from the early 2000s. And they're all going for around $50 to $70, much, much cheaper than this overpriced little slab.
And you mentioned it as well. Like, you know, you could actually get a decent Android phone for, you know, less than this phone, which is, you know, $250. You can get a decent Android phone for less than $250. That could do a lot more. And you runs on 3G or 4G even, right?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that you can see with the Lite Phone 2 is they've included LTE and they've included tethering capabilities. So that means that you take this minimalist phone, but you bring a tablet or a laptop with you, which kind of defeats the purpose. You might as well have a smartphone. And they're ignoring the easiest solution of all, which is to buy a smartphone and delete all of those apps.
Yeah, that's the better way of doing it. If you want a minimalist phone, you get a smartphone, you set it up to how you want to use it, and then you delete the rest of it because everyone's different, right? So do you think that, like, you know, they're just creating a market for, like you mentioned, the Silicon Valley, you know, entrepreneurs that are, you know, really high up the echelon of human being and humankind?
I mean, having read the Verge article, I have a less negative view of the designers than I had before. They do seem to be genuine people. They do seem to be trying to meet a need. But I think they're seeing things largely from within their own bubble. They're not seeing the wider perspective. They're seeing what other consumers like them want. But by and large, if you have a successful product, you're not just looking at consumers like you. You're looking at society at large.
Having said that, though, I do like the design of the phone. I think it looks something very different from a phone that we are used to as of today.
Of course. And I think that some of the innovations in it, especially the e-ink screen, I mean, I do understand why we aren't seeing more e-ink phone screens because the refresh rate is still a little bit too slow and most e-ink tablets do lag rather. But I would like to see more of this kind of low energy consumption e-ink technology coming through into smartphones and not just into those horrible hybrids that have an e-ink useless display on one side of the phone and then a normal screen on the other.
Oh gosh, yeah, those are horrible. Anyways, we'll be right back with King of Culture after this, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It is now time for, of course, King of Culture. Matt, what do we have?
We have something that I haven't actually read yet. It's a book. It's actually out next week. It's The Testament by Margaret Atwood, and it is the second part in the Handmaid's Tale, or the second installment. Now, if you've been watching the Handmaid's Tale on TV, the book and the TV series diverged after the first series. Mm-hmm. And so the TV series has been taking its own part. Margaret Atwood is not taking back control of the series. The TV series will continue to go its own way. But she's added her own next installment, again, not related to the TV show. And I like this idea of divergent media, things that start with the same concept but go off in different directions.
Yeah.
We saw it a little bit with Game of Thrones, yeah. But that was more to do with the fact that that the writer couldn't keep up with the TV after a certain point, so they had to go their own way. Yeah. But I actually like this idea that we can have different versions or completely different threads of the story in different places. I guess Star Wars has kind of been doing that a little bit, but it's slightly different in that the novel series are kind of set up very, very differently, and there isn't so much of a narrative arc with the movies either. Mm. But I like this idea of two separate origin points giving two completely different narrative arcs, which this is an example of.
And I think we've seen it with, you know, Netflix had the had an episode of Black Mirror where, you know, you could sort of like dictate your own ending for the movie itself.
But this is kind of like having
two
directors mediums, doing two completely different versions from the same kind of source story. So we've seen something a little bit similar as well with The Man in the High Castle, one of the Amazon series. Mm-hmm. It followed the Philip K. Dick book for the first series. But then it got a lot more interesting when it didn't reference the source material anymore. And you can kind of argue that Game of Thrones got more interesting as well when it stopped being reverential to the books, although it was never that reverential. It's just a nice development for technology, having these divergent streams of the same stories.
The book again is?
The Testaments by Margaret Atwood, and that will be out on the 10th of September. You can actually read an excerpt from the book on the Guardian's website as of now.
All right, cool. Anyways, moving on. We talked a lot about AI, and I have to say, Matt, I think this time I am actually fearful for my future because recently a breakthrough for AI technology has passed an 8th grade science test. 4 years ago, actually, there were 700 computer scientists competed in a contest to build an AI that could pass an 8th grade science test. There was an $80,000 prize money on the line, and they all failed. So I was pretty relieved back then. But then now, recently, the Allen Institute of Artificial Intelligence in Seattle unveiled a new system that passed the test with room to spare because it correctly answered more than 90% of the questions on an 8th grade science test, with more than 80% on the 12th grade exam. So one of the questions that, you know, is asked in this science test, of this 8th grade science test, is which equipment will best separate a mixture of iron fillings and black pepper? A, magnet, B, filter paper, C, triple beam balance, or D, voltmeter? And I looked at it and go like, all right, I'm doomed, because I think the answer is just all of it. Just try all of it. One of them would work, right?
No, it's a magnet. It's iron. The clue's in the iron and magnet.
So the system.
Or if you prefer, magnet and sneeze. Black pepper, sneeze, magnet, iron filings.
Just try all of them. One of them would work. Anyways, the system is called Aristo, and it's an indication that in just the past several months, they've actually made significant progress in developing AI. So they can now actually understand languages and mimic the logic and decision-making of humans. And just like the questionnaire that is in the 8th grade science test and 12th grade science test, it has a lot to do with logic. It's not just about learning the rules of science. It's also about, you know, logic itself and how it kind of combines all together, right? So the question, like, which change would most likely cause a decrease in number of squirrels living in the area? A decrease in a number of predators, B, a decrease in competition between squirrels, C, an increase in available food, and D, an increase in the number of forest fires.
Sorry, I laugh at any question that includes squirrels.
But, like, you know, it requires making connection using logic, not just mastering the rules.
Yeah, no, and I mean, people are still saying that despite this success, or researchers are still saying, despite this success, we're still a long way away from the kind of intelligence that human beings have. But what I think is probably more pertinent at this point is that we should be looking at what artificial intelligence is going to look like. Yeah. We keep assuming that it's going to look like our intelligence. It probably won't look like our intelligence. That doesn't necessarily make it less intelligent than us or more intelligent than us. It's just going to make it different in the same way that our logic process is not the same as a dolphin's.
Yeah.
You know, we have to accept that this is going to be an entity with its own structures, its own governance, and its own, as I said, logic systems. Mm. We're going to have to think of a way to integrate those systems into our world and find some way of coexisting and finding ways that these machines enhance our lives and probably at some point ways that we enhance their existence as well.
Yeah, so they're looking at, so basically they have built this on top of a system at Google. They've built a system called BERT, which combed through thousands of Wikipedia articles and a vast digital library of romance novels, science fiction, and other kind of self-published books.
But do you see how they're changing these things? Because, you know, originally we had systems like Skynet.
Yeah.
And of course, Skynet is scary. So now they're called BERT. Because you can't be threatened by anything called BERT. BERT is coming to get you. It's like, BERT's coming to get you.
Oh, so cuddly. Yeah, so through analyzing all the text in the book, BERT, who sounds very cuddly, learn how to guess the missing word in a sentence. And by learning that one skill, the researchers basically apply, you know, fundamental ways of language, how it's being constructed. And then now they're using that knowledge to apply it into other tasks. And that's where the Allen Institute built Aristo on top of the system called BERT. And they fed BERT with a wide range of questions and answers. And then it got to, you know, answer similar questions of its own. So yeah.
Do you see even the way BERT. You're talking about it now? They fed BERT with questions and it's already become friendly. If it was, we uploaded information into Skynet.
Ice cream.
Yeah, exactly. But it's exactly the same thing.
Well, let's move to the scary bit of technology. Amazon, they are trying out new scanners that can identify people by their hand to let them pay for purchases in stores. This is according to the New York Post. So if successful, they could be rolled out in Whole Foods, which is, of course, owned by Amazon. Amazon's refused to comment so far, but they apparently say the technology will be codenamed Orville.
There, you see, it's happened again.
It's being tested at vending machines in the company's office in New York. So basically how it works is the users hold their hands over a scanner which uses computer vision and depth geometry to identify each hand's shape and size. And then prime customers will just need to go into the stores for their hands to be captured and then linked to their accounts before they can use as payments. Now, hand geometry has been around actually as long as, you know, most biometrics, probably even longer than fingerprints and facial recognition. But, you know, people these days, they seem to be happy with fingerprints. But I'm not sure about hands, though, unless there is a 3D printed hand that I can buy and make it my own. Because if someone were to steal that data, I can then just replace my fake hand.
But they can do that even if you print a fake hand with a fake palm print on, they can still hack that palm print and you still need to get another one.
Yeah, but at least I don't need to chop off my real hand if they've actually stolen the data of my actual hand.
They might chop off your hand, and in which case,
you'll
be left with a very inferior 3D plastic one. I would actually carry the 3D hand to give to robbers so they don't cut off your hand.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But I don't know, paying things with your hand, are we just taking a step too far now? How hard is it to just pay with your thumbprint that, you know, most of us are doing it with our e-wallets already? Why do we need to go with hands now?
No, I think the way forward is actually going to be when we start to pay for things with our tongue. We'll actually just walk into shops and we'll lick a sensor.
Oh no. It's now time for your TM1 Tech Minute. We often talk about the internet as being a great leveler, allowing companies of every size and scale to perform globally and find an international customer base. To operate from a bedroom in Taiping and creating a customer base in Toronto. And while the digital economy presents great opportunities, it also opens your business up to global competition, especially in the service sector, which makes it especially important to hone your competitive advantage. From payroll to secure data storage to customer service solutions, cost-effective process automation and business outsourcing tools, phones can help you maintain that critical edge in a connected global market. Made possible by TM1 Smart Solutions, the data storage, processing and analysis powered by artificial intelligence. TM1 provides the speed and agility needed by businesses. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute. Matt, what do we have for Geek Tunes?
Well, as the theme of today's MSP was a good idea, this is an old track, one we've played a few times in the past. Mm-hmm. This is by Sugar, a good idea.
BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.